I hope we're understanding some things here in Job that, the first couple chapters is about God and Satan's conversation, leading to Job being ministered to, so to speak, by Satan. Maybe administered to is a better word than ministered to, because it's definitely not been ministered to. But I want to go back over a couple of small things real quick before we go into the last part of chapter 3, and that is just a real quick recap. Chapter 1, you see Satan show up, and ultimately what we need to understand, a couple of things about the book of Job. Number one, Satan wasn't looking for Job. In fact, Satan was leaving Job alone, it seems like. God suggests Job. Now, before we get into the whole conversation of, well, God was testing Job. He wasn't testing Job. The Bible tells us that God does not test, nor can he be tested. So we need to understand that. And so I want to make sure that when we get into this speech and this opening speech that Job is sharing, we need to understand a couple of quick things about this. Is that number one, Job is not being tested by God. Number two is that God does suggest Job, but he does not test Job. And the suggestion that God makes here is not because he thinks Job will falter in his faith. It's not because he thinks that Job will prove weak in the way he handles himself. In fact, the reality of what we see in the book of Job is that God allows the testing of Job because God has faith in Job. I had somebody question me about that one time when I said it on the radio, and here's why I say that. The conversation goes the same two consecutive days between God and Satan. Don't believe me? Read the first four verses of each chapter. The first four verses of Satan talking to Job. It's actually 6 through like 8 or 9 in chapter 1, and then it's 1 through like 4 in chapter 2. But it says, one day the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. And the Lord asked Satan, where have you come from? Chapter 2, one day the sons of God came again to present themselves before the Lord. The only word in that sentence is different is again. So one day the sons of God, or the angels, came to present themselves before the Lord. Satan, being a fallen angel, would know when these meetings take place. He's got the freedom to roam, and so he shows up. And the first question asked of him is, where did you come from? Now, that may seem like a redundant question. It may seem rhetorical. It may seem like it didn't really need to be asked. Why? Because, well, God knew where Satan came from. He sent him there. And Satan gives him an answer. He says, from roaming through the earth and walking around on it. Well, I got to thinking today and was having a conversation with another minister. And the first thing that popped into my head when I paraphrased the story while we were talking. I said, it's funny. Satan was minding his own business. He was just showing up to try to get ear on somebody else's. But in reality, Satan was doing exactly what he was told to do. Roam the earth. Right? Satan was minding his own business, and God said, have you considered Job? So Satan was minding the business that he had been told to attend. And he shows back up. But Satan showing up at the meeting in itself is Satan not minding his own business. Let's be honest. But honestly, it sounds like he's bored. Like he just wants something to do. And God suggests that he test Job. Now, it's not really that God suggested that he test Job so much as God just says, have you considered Job? But based on the answers that we get, it's almost like God knew that Satan had considered Job But he didn't. But Satan felt like he couldn't touch him based on the answer Satan gives. Now, the thing I want to focus on before we go into chapter 3, though, is these words of God. In verse 3 of chapter 2, it's the same in chapter 1 when he says, "Have you considered my servant Job? No one else on earth is like him, a man of perfect integrity who fears God and turns away from evil." Now that is what he says, and that's only what he says in chapter 1. Chapter 2, he adds a little more to it because he says he still retains his integrity even though you incited him against me, or me against him, to destroy him for no good reason. So chapter 1, quick paraphrase, God says, if you consider Job, there's no one like him, a man of perfect integrity. And Satan then goes and destroys Job's life, except for his health, right? Now, we can say, well, this may have happened over a period of time. No, this happened quickly. Satan left immediately when God told him he could, so that God wouldn't change his mind. And then the response that we see is, a servant came to Job to tell him this had happened. While he was still talking, another servant came to tell him that this had happened. While he was still talking, another servant came. So what you recognize in that is, this happened. Job found out about everything in a matter of 5 minutes, maybe less.
How did the servant keep bringing him?
Well, they took. Well, there was that. I mean, Job needed to find out somehow, right? But, okay. One day when Job's sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their brother's house, a messenger came to Job and reported, "While the oxen were plowing and donkeys grazing nearby, the Sabians swooped down and took them away. They struck down the servants with the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." In other words, one servant ran while the others protected. And if you've ever seen any old movies, it kind of lends to a similar situation. When you have a group of people that's tasked with protecting something, one is typically the one that runs to tell the owner what's going on. You know, when you've got a whole group of people, someone call 911, that person goes. And the rest stay to fight or whatever. Well, inevitably, that one that ran sometimes survives. They're the only one left to tell the story. And who's going to believe one person, right? Who's going to believe the story of one when there's no other witnesses to tell anything? That's the kind of conversation. But that's the same conversation you get with all of them. I alone escaped. I alone escaped. So he's got basically four servants left. I alone escaped to tell you, to let you know what's happened. So he's got four servants who all show up at the same time to tell him about four different things that ultimately mean the destruction of everything he owns. His legacy, his children, all of it. Well, in that process of stuff, Job's immediate response to it after falling to the ground and tearing his clothes is by saying, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will return. The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." The Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. How many of us in that moment would feel that we could respond in that way? Well, then comes chapter 2, when then Satan says, all right, look, you know, yeah, you took everything from him, but his health is still there. A man's going to do anything he can to protect himself. A man will do anything he can. Satan's words, skin for skin. A man will give up everything he owns in exchange for his life. In other words, if Job thinks he's going to die, he will completely tell you off and get rid of you. If Job is faced with his own mortality, and honestly, I know people that feel that way. Now, let's stop for a minute and let's reflect on this situation. We're not talking about Job trying, you know, Satan's saying that Job, if given the opportunity to come back and say, I can heal you, but you're gonna have to renounce your faith. He's in essence saying that Job will trade his life for mere words. Job would trade everything he owned to live. That's kind of the conversation that's going on here. Or he will be so down, depressed, and dark that he'll kill himself and take his own life, which in return would renounce his faith in God, that God is in control, and ultimately take it into his own hands to kill himself and just be done with it. So Satan is testing Job, but he's making Job think, if in his way, he's trying to make Job think that he is wanting to, you know, that it's God doing it. The things that happened to his children, and, you know, God allowed the Chaldeans to come, God allowed the Sabians to come, and God allowed the weather to take his children out. God allowed the house to be destroyed and the children to die. All of this was an act of God. That's the way that it looks. And it's the way that ultimately, when we go through the later parts of Job, we'll see. But here he gets to this point where Job's health is now in question. He's got sores all over his body. He's breaking pottery to scrape them. And his wife sees the pain he's in. And as we talked about that and we went through that, it's a mourning lady who is going through a tough time, who's just lost her children, who's just lost her home, who's lost everything herself. She's not, you know, she's telling him to curse God and die. You know, God didn't protect us from this, so why would, you know, just curse him and die? Be done. Then the friends come and they see him from a distance. They tear their clothes, they pour their ashes, they throw dust in the air, they do all the fun stuff that happens with mourning. Then they come and sit in silence for 7 days. And, you know, the wife said something important. Are you still holding on to your integrity? Well, remember, God had reminded Satan that Job retained his integrity after day one. And here Job has retained his integrity in day two by calling his wife out for what she's saying to him. Because it says in all of this, Job did not sin. Right? It says it wasn't wrong what he said to his wife. It wasn't wrong in his reaction. Then we get to verse 1 of chapter 3 where Job begins to speak. Job's suffering intensely. His friends recognize that. They come and sit with him. They say nothing. And Job then speaks. And the first thing Job does is begin to speak about how it would be better had he not been born. Now, I can make an argument about when the beginning of life is. If we want to get into that argument about how abortion is wrong, we can. Because ultimately, if this is not the way it was intended to be, then somebody correct me. But after this, Job began to speak and curse the day he was born. He said, "May the day I was born perish, and the night that said a boy is conceived." If that, to me, isn't proof where they stood on when someone's life began, a boy is conceived the night that his mother found out that she was pregnant with him. The night that they found out he was to be born. Conception is not birth. Conception is the beginning. That's all I'm going to say about that, because that's not what this is about. But it's a pretty good argument, I think. But then he says, he goes through this whole thing, if only that day had turned to darkness, may God above not care about it or light shine on it. In other words, he gets to the point where the blessing of a woman having a child, he's cursing his mother for having him. A barren woman was a cursed woman, according to the tradition of the time. But here is Job, and he goes through all of these things. He's saying, my birth shouldn't matter. The day I was born is nothing but a terrible day, because it's been all terrible since then. Had I died when I was born, these kids would not have been born. My wife would have found someone besides me. Their lives would be in order. Job is saying none of this would have happened had I not been born. You know, all of it could have been fixed had I just not existed. And he's in essence saying, can I just go back to the beginning and it be stopped? The arguments here about being born to even being aborted to being stillborn. All of these things exist in this statement he's making. And then we get through all the way down to verse 19. And then into verse 20 is where we'll start tonight in chapter 3. But I want to go back where it starts in verse 13 and says, or verse 12 and says, "Why did the knees receive me and why were the breasts for me to nurse? Now I would certainly be lying down in peace. I would be asleep. Then I would be at rest with the kings and the counselors of the earth who rebuilt ruined cities for themselves, or the princes who had gold, who filled their houses with silver. Or why was I not hidden like a miscarried child, like infants who never see daylight? There the wicked cease to make trouble, and they're weary, and the weary find rest. The captives are completely at rest. They do not hear a taskmaster's voice. Both small and great are there, and the slave is set free from his master." Job is defining the equality of death. There's nothing political about what I'm saying, but all men are created equal. And the only time that we recognize that equality is in death. Because all are returned to the dust, whether great or small, whether rich or poor, whether a slave or a master, all are buried and return to the same dust. That is huge. Because what Job is really reflecting on here is that we're all equal in death, and that would be much better. That would be where happiness lies. Because right now, I would be happier dead. I would be happier without life. I would be happier in the darkness of death, because my body would no longer feel pain. The suffering would no longer be there. But he's talking back all the way to his birth, saying, you know, if my death had happened then no one had to go through any of this. And then we get to verse 20, and this is where the story kind of turns. But, you know, here we find, you know, when we get to verse 20, all are equal in death. Remember that as we read these next few verses. Because I think it's key for us to remember as we go into these. But it starts in verse 20. It says, "Why is light given to one burdened with grief? A life to those whose existence is bitter, who wait for death, but it does not come, and search for it more than for hidden treasure, who are filled with much joy and are glad when they reach the grave. Why is life given to a man whose path is hidden, whom God has hedged in?" My pages are stuck together. "I sigh when food is put before me, and my groans pour out like water, for the thing I feared has overtaken me, and what I dreaded has happened to me. I cannot relax or be calm. I have no rest, for turmoil has come." That's tough. I mean, think about it. Those are some tough words. Job finds no purpose in life anymore. That is a hard place to be. Now, I went back to the first part of the story for a reason. I left out part of the first part of the story also for a reason, but we've got to reflect on that at this point. What was Job's purpose? I've spent a lot of time thinking about purpose lately. The book that I just read that we went and heard Jody speak on last week talks a lot about purpose and finding success through the surrender that comes to God. Job finds no purpose, whether he finds no purpose for life anymore. And the reason being is because the purpose that he had made himself about was God's work. And if you don't believe that, look at what Job did for his children. Job's sole purpose was to worship God, to offer the sacrifice for his children that they needed because maybe they sinned. That's what he wanted to do in life. It was to serve God. That was the purpose. Everything in his life has now been taken. He has no purpose. He has lost his purpose. He's lost everything. And it can be a dark place to be. It can be a dark road to get on. And the reality is that he thinks through this whole thing, he would have rather been dead when he was born than to have lived the life he's lived. No matter how great it has been up to the point he is at right now, this point outweighs them all. Now think about that for a moment. Think about the lives we live, the things we struggle with, the places we find ourselves. When we go through the difficult days of life, when we go through the struggles of life, we find ourselves bitter over the hurt. We find ourselves broken over the things that we lose, and we don't recognize the blessings that we've had all along. We start to lose focus on what is really going on. Now, Job obviously didn't know about the conversations between God and Satan. He didn't know that God had faith in him, is why he was facing the trouble. Especially now that Satan has made it look like God is the one that took the things that Job had. But here he is, and he's going through this, and now he's complaining that his life has continued. Why would light be given to someone who is so broken? Why would light given to a burdened soul with grief? Why would life be given to those whose existence is bitter? Why did I wake up again this morning? Wouldn't it be better if I just ended it all? Why do I have to do this or that? Think about that. How many times have we thought those things over a bad day? We wake up in the morning and we don't care. There's no reason for me to be alive. There's no reason for me to exist. There's no reason for me to even be here. If I'm going to lose everything, if my life is going to be what it is, then why do I have to deal with it? And that's where Job is. And now, I'm not trying to be all sad and down and out. This is the hardest. I think these are the hardest chapters of the book. This chapter especially, because you hear the heart of Job and you understand it. You can think about things in your own life. You completely understand it. No matter what your age, you're going to get it and you understand it. When men are set on quarreling, there's no end. The corrupt heart will carry on. I mean, Job here curses the day of his birth and he courts the day of his death. He's literally saying death can't come soon enough. And the beginning of this and the impatience is almost like where he is in the whole thing. And he thinks it is, well, let's just look here for a minute at verses 20 through 22, where he really thinks that miserable lives should not be prolonged. He's literally saying, why would light be given to a burdened soul? Wherefore is light in life given to those that are bitter in soul? I mean, think about that for a minute. Wherefore is light in life given to those that are bitter in soul? What is bitter in soul? I mean, bitterness of soul, spiritual grievance. He, in essence, if we are bitter to the core, if we're bitter here in our heart and in our soul, what's that going to mean for the rest of our life? Everything is going to be bitter. Everything we come across, everything we go around, everything we encounter, every person we see, we are going to respond bitterly toward.
Negative attitude.
Exactly. But how do we know when someone's having trouble at home in a marriage? Everything around them starts to fall apart. How do we know when someone's having trouble in their personal life? Everything around them starts to fall apart. They can't seem to get a grasp on any of it. And everything is negative. Everything is bitter. Everything's an attack to them. You could genuinely go up to somebody who's having a bad day at home and wish them a good day. I've seen this happen before. In fact, I've probably been a part of it before, where I've walked up to someone and said, I hope you have a great day. And the response is, well, I hope you have a great day. And you go, what? Nothing. Or they take things out on you. We all have done that. Charlie's never done a bad thing to Tammy, but he gets to hear it all the time. Right? But you know it. But bitterness of soul is what makes life bitter itself. I mean, I can be having a bad day, and if I'm bitter here, if it's a struggle, if I've lost something, if something's hurting so bad spiritually within me, it's going to affect everything else around me. There's just no way about it. And the thing is then he says, why does he give light? So he means God here, and he's saying, why does he give light? Why is there light given to the one burdened with grief? Why do I have to deal with this today? Why do I have to even be awake? You know, why do I have to be alive? Why does my day have to continue going through this hard time? We've all been there. We have all been there more than once. And yet, if we go back to what the devil told God, he says he will curse you to his face, to your face. He said, a man will curse you to your face if you do the right thing. And so here, Job is reflecting on the divine providence as unjust and unkind in the continuation of life. He's reflecting on that divine providence, that it is unkind for life to continue for a man who is going through a grief, going through a struggle, going through a hardship. And as we look at that, then the first verse, let's just replace the word light with life. Why is life given to one burdened with grief? Why is life given to those whose existence is bitter, who wait for death and it does not come, and search for it more than for hidden treasure? People who are to the point where they're in such misery. This light is said to be given to us. And if it were not for daily renewed as a fresh gift, then we wouldn't have it, right? We wake up each morning with a gift of life. Or else we don't wake up, right? Life is a gift. It's precious. But Job reckons that those who are in misery, it is a gift, but not a gift. Doron, Adoron. It's a gift, but not a gift. And it would be a gift that they had better be without. It's better to be without. You know, it's free, but I'd really rather that I didn't get it, is what he's saying here. You've given me something that I don't want. You ever get that, the socks that you got when you were 7 for Christmas? The gift that you didn't want, it's a gift. Thanks. You know?
Gee, thanks.
That's kind of where Job's at right now. He's like, thanks for waking me up again. Thanks for giving me another day. Thanks for nothing. You know, that's kind of the mentality that goes with this. And he says, who long for death. And really, the reality that we see here is he kind of thinks of himself in particular, hardly dealt with, that he might not be eased of his pain and misery by death when he could not get ease in any other way. There's nothing that will take the pain away but death. There's nothing that can make it better. And here he is in his own misery, trying to figure it out. He's impatient for death, and death is not coming. And the reality is that he's impatient of life, because the troubles are not only unnatural themselves, they're, you know, at this point he's ungrateful to the giver of life. That bitterness is all the way to the core. He's so bitter about the situation, and he's struggling just to even get through it. But grace teaches us that in the midst of life's greatest comforts, we need to be willing to die, and in the midst of his greatest crosses, we need to be willing to live. What does that mean? It means that in the midst of the things going the best that they could ever go, we need to be willing to let them go, to go home. If death is what's called for in that moment, we need to be willing to go. I can't leave it all behind. That fear of death that we have when things are going great, I just don't want to die. I can't imagine I don't want to leave all this behind. But we need to be willing. That's what grace teaches us. And grace also teaches us, though, that in the midst of the hardest day, we need to be willing to live. We need to not only be willing to die on the day that it's going the best it could ever go, but we need to be willing to live when we want to die. When we're faced with that mortality of everything around me has fallen apart, I must get up and carry on. Can't just leave the cross on the side of the road and continue like nothing happened, or leave the cross and then bury ourselves. If it's not what God needs us to do, some days we need to pick up the cross and carry it through. And that may be a hard thing to do. It may be a hard thing to really grasp. But grace teaches us in the midst of the greatest comforts to be willing to die, in the midst of the greatest cross to be willing to live. And to excuse himself in this earnest desire which he has to die, Job pleads this little, he pleads the little comfort and satisfaction that he's had in life. He pleads about that. And, he goes through this entire thing and he goes through all this stuff. Who wait for death, but it does not come, and search for it more than for hidden treasure. He's searching for death more than he is for abundance in life anymore. Like he wants to die more than he wants anything. Who are filled with much joy and are glad when they reach the grave. They're happy, happier dead, is what he says. And then he says, why is life given to a man whose path is hidden, whom God has hedged in? Now, at this point, he does practically say, I've been put in this corner. I've been trapped. God had me protected. Now I have nothing. But then we get to verse 24. I sigh when food is put before me and my groans pour out like water. His way was hidden and God hedged him in. He saw no way of open of deliverance, or knew what course he could take. And, his way was hedged up with thorns that he could not find the path. Maybe the conversation later on in Job chapter 23, we see that conversation. But then, we get into this whole thing. But in verse 24, he had no comfort of life. The sighing comes before I eat. The sorrows of life prevented him from even being hungry. He didn't want to eat. We all know what depression feels like, right? I mean, because Job's describing it in detail. If you're ever looking for the words to describe what depression feels like, go to Job chapter 3 and read it. And tell others. Say, this is the most accurate I can come to telling you how I feel. Here's Job chapter 3. Read it. Tell me if you don't feel that way sometimes. That's where depression starts. Luckily, read the rest of Job. Don't just stick in chapter 3, or else you're going to miss the point of what it's saying. But this is a man who's destroyed and depressed. And what we need to recognize, though, in chapter 3, verse 23, divine sovereignty is an ocean without a bottom and without a shore. You're floating in the middle of somewhere with no end in sight. And all we can do is to set sail and find water, find uncharted water, and hopefully when we get there, there's a shore. I mean, it's like being stuck in the middle of the ocean and nowhere to go. Up, down, sideways. It looks like everything's done with. You're just literally floating on nothing. But he saw no way of deliverance in all of this. And even in his former prosperous state, troubles were continually feared, so that it was never easy, is the way this conversation sounds to him. Because he says, the thing I feared has overtaken me. In other words, what Job feared, he was always worried about losing it all. And he did. All at once. We're always worried about that. We're always scared to death that it's all going to end one day. It's all going to be done. It's all going to be over. We're not going to have what we worked for. I put so much work into this house. I can't lose it. Tell that to the fire, you know? Tell that to the bank when you can't afford it. A lot of the work that people put into stuff today is credit and doesn't go any farther than the bank anyway, right? But the reality is he never had it easy in life because he always worried and had a fear of losing it all. And that fear has now overtaken him because the reality of it has set in. He says, and what I dreaded has happened to me. The things that I was so scared of, the things I was anxious, the things I was worried about, the things that I thought never would happen, but I thought, what if it does? The worries, the fears, the struggle, all of those things have now happened. And verse 26, I cannot relax or be calm. I have no rest, for turmoil has come. Now that it's happened, I'm lost. I don't know what to do. Now I don't have anything to worry about because it's done. But now I don't have anything to be happy about because it's gone. Think about that for a minute. This is where Job finds himself. And, you know, so he goes back to birth. He goes back to the day he was born. He wasn't in safety. He didn't have rest then. And his grief has now made it to this way that he had not been necessarily, you know, I don't know. Maybe Job's trying to get God to provoke. Maybe he's trying to provoke God to tell him why. We all do that. Why, God? Why have you done this? Why have you allowed this thing to happen to me? Maybe this is Job's way of provoking God, just asking the questions. Again, we go through the book of Job. Job asks a lot of questions. He really hadn't been negligent. He hadn't been mindless in the affairs of his life. I mean, he had great things going and he was always aware. He even offered sacrifices for his children and tried to make sure that the children were taken care of just in case they had sinned. I mean, this is a man who gave everything, who really was worried. He was a worrier. Job was a worrier. He worried about the sins overtaking his children, and now here he says, everything I'm worried about has come true. Everything that I was afraid of has now become my life. I was afraid of losing it all and I've lost it. I was afraid my children would die in sin and they have. They were having a party when they died. What if they sinned? I didn't offer a sacrifice for them. Now I have nothing to offer for a sacrifice. It's all been taken away. I have nothing. He was never secure based on this statement alone that he makes. Job was never secure in his faith. He never had faith in himself. Now that's funny coming from a man who God obviously had faith in. God said, have you considered my servant Job? There is no one like him, a man of perfect integrity. Job sure seems to be down on himself about that, doesn't he? Sure seems to be down and out about this situation. So here he is and he's trying to make all of this make sense. He wasn't secure, but he didn't indulge himself in the ease and softness of life. He didn't trust in his wealth because he knew it could be gone at any moment. He was afraid of that. But he didn't flatter himself with the hopes that it would continue and stay. Trouble came to convince and remind him of the vanity of the world. And he had not forgotten when he lived at ease. I mean, he knew life was easy for him at times, but he feared that it wouldn't be. That's the statement he's making here. And his way was hidden because he didn't know what lied ahead. He always was worried. He had the thorns of the world right outside the gates. And God had hedged him in, yes, and protected him, yes. But he didn't know what was to come because he didn't know the path that was set before. He was too worried about maintaining what he had and making sure that nothing had happened. He knew not where God continue with him. And now this consideration that he's going through, the aggravating grief that he's facing, nothing can make trouble easy. I mean, that's the honest truth. Nothing can make trouble easy. But, and bear with me just for a second, there is one thing that might help alleviate, and that is the testimony of our suffering. The testimony of our grief that we're going through, and the testimony of our conscience, knowing the truth, knowing what the truth is, and knowing the truth in our own lives, that God does not test us, does not bring us trouble, but God does allow our testing because he has faith in us and he has faith in what we can do. In some measure, we did our duty during the days where we had the prosperity. We did what we were led to do. We taught what we needed to teach with our lives. And in the days that we had prosperity, in the days that we had money, in the days that we had everything going well, and the days that were easy, we did what we were asked to do. But in the day of trouble, we need to also do what we're asked to do. And an expectation of trouble will make it sit lighter when it comes, but it's still going to be hard. We can sit and worry about the trouble that might come. A good example of this, as I wrap it up, is this. Think about the end times. Think about the apocalypse. Think about the things that the end of days. How many people do you know that are scared to death about that on a daily basis? I mean, the 80s, it seemed to be a lot more than some people now. Some people now just don't care. They wait, they wait for their master, the devil, to come because that's, you know, they've bought into it. But the reality is, how many people do we know in the church today, and how many people around us, they're constantly talking about, oh, this is what I'm seeing in the news. Well, you're seeing what the news wants you to see because it's just another program like anything else. Yes, there are things we need to pay attention to. Yes, there are things that I believe are happening around us that are prophecy and they're being fulfilled all the way around us. But should we be scared? Being fearful of the day that somebody walks in that door and shoots us isn't going to do us any good. It might make the day it happens a little easier, but it's still going to happen, and there's still going to be trouble when it does happen, right? That's not saying it will happen, but if it does, worrying about it ain't going to get us any closer or any farther. It's just going to cause us needless pain. But when the day comes, the thing is, in our lives, the way we've conditioned ourselves and the way that things have happened, the less surprising something is, the less horrible it is. Well, I saw that coming. It was even take it a little easier, right? But does it mean it hurts less? Does it mean the struggle's not still there? No. Ultimately, what we see Job saying in chapter 3 is, I feared for this day. I saw this day coming at some point in my life. I knew that this was a possibility. And yet, here I am, now that I'm going through it, and all I want to do is die. All I want to do is roll over and die. Because honestly, my life would have been better, and theirs would have too, if I'd have just not been born. And we go back to the days where we think, well, what day would have fixed everything for everyone? The only day we can say with certainty would have fixed it for everyone in our lives is the day we were born. Job starts there. Why? Because honestly, I think he's scared. The day he feared has now come. He's lost it all. The only way to keep from losing it all is to never experience it at all. We can go through what we want to go through in life. We can go through it easy, or we can be faithful. If God's allowing a test in your life, then that test has come because God has faith in you. Have you considered my servant? There's no one like me.
Some days he must have a lot of faith in me.
I think he's got more faith in us than we have in ourselves many times.
Yeah. I get tested a lot.
Well, every test brings testimony. Every test can end with a testimony. You know, every struggle can become something great. And even though we may be going through it right now, there are brighter days to come. If we know anything about the book of Job, we realize, did he get his kids back? No, but he got blessed with double portion of everything he had. Why? Because he remained faithful to the end. And that's the same promise we're given in Revelation. One day it will all make sense. Unfortunately, Job, what we're recognizing right now is this is Job at the first stage. The day of loss, the struggle of loss, the struggle of frustration that we don't understand, and the struggle that we have when we try our best to figure out why. But the reality is so what? The day you feared may come, but when that day has come, how are you going to respond? Are you going to cower into the corner and think, my life is over, I should die, or take your own life? Or are you going to sit back? Remember what I said about halfway through. Grace gives us the strength to want to live in the hard times. Grace is what gives us that strength, because we recognize that, you know, it's not becoming so wrapped up on the easy days that we don't want to, you know, when everything's good, we don't want to die. But when everything's bad, we don't want to live. It's finding ourselves doing the opposite of those two things. That's where grace lies. When the days are good, we find peace in knowing that if we left right now, we could give it all up because what's ahead is better. And in the days of trouble, we find peace in knowing I can live through this because he's giving me hope. He's giving me opportunity. And on the other side of this is a blessing. I've just got to get there. I don't understand why. But that's where Job finds himself, is on a day of struggle. He's saying, I'm done. But God's grace wasn't done. And that's the beautiful part of it.